Our verse this week is found from the Gospel of Matthew. It's where Jesus is speaking in the Sermon on the Mount and says, "Bless those who bless you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you." And he says that right after he says, "Love your enemies." You've heard it said that you should hate your enemies, but I say you love your enemies. And he tells us to do all those things. And the reason he tells us to do it is the last phrase of this particular passage that says, that you may be the sons of your Father in heaven. That you might reflect God as you are living your life. Today we're going to look in the life of David. And this will be the last time we deal with David's life for a while, because this leads us up to the end of the time of his years before he's made king. And we're going to talk about the difficulty he's having, because he's having trouble with his boss. Have you ever had trouble with your boss? He's got trouble with his in-laws. Have you ever had difficulties with in-laws and family relationships? Have you ever had trouble there? Well, you know, David was having these difficulties, and we'll talk about those some today and how he handled them in a unique setting. We're going to talk about David loving a foe. Saul had placed himself as David's foe, and we're going to see how David handled his care for Saul. We know that he spared his life twice, but you get to see his heart today and how that was. As he manages the grief that comes because Jonathan dies and Saul dies. And it's a sad, sad tale, but it's interesting to see how David handles this situation. So we're going to be going from chapter 27 of Samuel, look a little bit in Saul's life, and then we're running over to the first chapter of 2 Samuel, where David talks about that. But let me just tell you about the backstory, the situation that's taken place. For 10 years now, Saul had been after David. He'd been on David many, many times. There are 11 times that we know about in the Scripture that we're told of that he tried to kill David. Were there more? I don't know. But 11 we know about during the 10 years where he almost had David where he could have killed him. And in this setting, David was a man who had trusted God and done well. But on the last time that Saul came against him, this was 16 months from the time we are in the story right now, David made an interesting statement. He said in his heart, "Now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than I should speedily escape to the land of the Philistines. And Saul will despair of me to seek me anymore." And so, because he talked with himself, didn't get counsel from anybody else, especially didn't talk to God, he made a decision to go to the Philistine country. And in doing that, he really left a lot of the ways of God. He just stepped out and made his own decision. I sadly say I've done that. Maybe you have too, not checked out things with God and gone to another area for a while and rather than really walking God's way. But David did that. And while he was in Philistia, numerous things took place where he had to bend and compromise in order to be able to live the life that he was living. He had to do things that were wrong, but he did them anyway. And as he's in that situation, as he's down in Ziklag, he goes to join a group of Philistines that were going to battle after Saul, which was a terrible setting because he'd committed himself not to harm Saul, and they wanted him to join in a battle that was going to be taking place up in Israel, a battle that was going to be taking place in Syria that was going to be one where they were going to try and put Saul and Israel to rest. They'd been a problem for the Philistines for a long time, and they were going to take them out. And David was encouraged to go along with them. But he didn't. And the Philistine princes, not the one that he'd had league with, the other Philistine princes said, "You can't do it." So David heads back. It's about a 50-plus mile trip back down to where he was. And when he got there, he found that Amalekites had come in and had taken his wife and the other ladies and all the children and had burned Ziklag, the city they were staying in, and had carried everybody else away as slaves. And David hears the news, and it's terrible, and the men tell David they're going to stone him. You know, that's how people are, right? Something goes bad, they got to find a scapegoat. And so they were going to kill David. But David, instead, it says in the Scriptures, that David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. And David went before the Lord, and he started his way back at this point in juncture. He'd been living spiritually, as well as physically in a foreign land. And now he's going to be heading back to the Lord. And he calls for the priest that's there to bring the instruments of direction. And he asks God what he should do. And God gives him information. And David goes and rescues all the ladies that were there. So he moves from his backslidden state to a renewed relationship with the Lord. And I'm so glad that took place in his life, because he has a lot more living to do. And it can happen for anybody. There's a passage in Jeremiah where in years later, Jeremiah is going to be speaking. He's going to say, "Return, you backsliding children, and I will heal your backslidings." This is what the Lord says. "Behold, we come unto thee," the people say, "for thou art our God." And that's the simple way to come back. All you got to do is go back to the Lord. He's always there, ready to take you back. The sad thing is I've seen many people that still want to stay away from God. Once they step out into a situation where they're not walking with Him, they've turned their back on God. It's really hard for them to make that turn. Sometimes God will allow situations to take place like happened in David's life, where all of a sudden their world's pulled out. Everything that David accumulated, everything David had put together during the time he was in the Philistine area, was totally gone. Plus his wife. And so it was a terrible, terrible situation. But if we turn, God's there to receive us back. And David had that. But there's a problem, because you have another guy who's on the scene. His name's Saul. And Saul gets ready to face the battle for his life. In chapter 28, maybe you'll turn there with me in 1 Samuel chapter 28, we have the story about what took place. The Philistines are amassing a major army. All the five city-states of the Philistines are joining their forces together to go against Israel, to go against Saul. And he knows it's going to be a big battle, and he doesn't know what to do. And so Samuel had died. He had killed the priest. So no prophets really wanted to hang out with Saul, because if you gave him bad news, he could kill you. And so nobody wanted to talk with him. So Saul is really left without knowing what to do. Samuel had died. The Philistines were gathering at Gilboa, and Saul's trying to figure out what to do. And the Lord didn't answer him by dreams. The Lord didn't send a prophet to him. No prophet really wanted to go, but God didn't send one. And so Saul said to his servants, notice down in verse 7 of chapter 28. He said, "Find me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her." And so here Saul is breaking one of the rules that he had been enforcing. It's not uncommon when you have leaders who set up laws, and then after they set them up, they'll break them themselves. And so he does that. And he goes to this medium's house. She's scared to give him any information. But he feels desperate. He's got to figure out what to do. And he goes there and he disguises himself. And even with the disguise, she didn't know it was Saul. She still backs off and says she doesn't want to do it. But he persuades her, and she has a seance. And she asks Saul, who does he want her to bring up? Notice verse 11. "And the woman said, 'Who shall I bring up for you?' And he said, 'Bring Samuel for me.' And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, 'You have deceived me, for you are Saul.' And the king said to her, 'Do not be afraid. What did you see?' And the woman said to Saul, 'I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth.' And he said to her, 'What was his form?' And she said, 'An old man coming up, and he was covered with a mantle.' And Saul perceived that it was Samuel. And he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down. And Samuel said to Saul, 'Why have you disturbed me, bringing me up?' And Saul answered, 'I am deeply, deeply distressed, for the Philistines make war against me, and God has departed from me and does not answer me anymore, neither by prophet nor by dream. Therefore I have called you, that you may reveal to me what I should do.' And Samuel said, 'Why then do you ask me, seeing the Lord has departed from you and has become your enemy? And the Lord has done for himself as he spoke by me. For the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor, namely David. Because you did not obey the voice of the Lord, nor execute his fierce wrath upon the Amalekites, therefore the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. And the Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hands of the Philistines. And immediately Saul fell full length on the ground and was dreadfully afraid. Wow. You know, here's one of the times where God allows Samuel. I think it was really Samuel. I don't think it was a demon. I think it was Samuel who came back, because the lady who was used to dealing in demons was frightened. She had seen something she hadn't seen before. And I think Samuel's just telling, hey, you know, it's over. And the report's terrible. And Saul falls down on the ground. He started great. Now he's a quibbling man because he's just terrified at what's going to take place. And when you get over to chapter 31, chapter 29 is where David's dealing with the Philistines about fighting. And when you get down to chapter 31, you get to this major battle. Let's read what's taking place in chapter 30. So the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines, and they fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchua, Saul's sons. And the battle became intense against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me." But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men died together that same day. And when the men of Israel, who were on the other side of the valley, saw the men of Israel had fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook their cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. And you have a terrible defeat. You know, in the record of Saul's life, we never have a defeat. Even though he wasn't walking with God, he was a king. God had given him the heart of a king. He'd always gone out to battle, and he never lost a battle till now. And now it's a terrible defeat. He'd walked away from God. And when you go over to Chronicles, remember, 1 and 2 Chronicles are like Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They tell us the same story of 1 and 2 Samuel and Kings. They tell us that again in Chronicles. Not so much 1 Samuel, but a lot of 2 Samuel. They tell us a good bit about this situation. And so it tells us that. It says that Saul did three things. He went against God's way not waiting for Samuel. He went against God's way in not taking care of the Amalekites. Remember, the Amalekites were this group of people who had fought against Israel when they came out of Egypt. They were in the wilderness, and they just gotten out of Egypt, and all of a sudden the Amalekites come down to battle with them. And God never forgot that. They did several other battles with them when they were in the wilderness. God never forgot that. He said he would take care of them. And he sent Saul to do it, but Saul didn't do it. Saul didn't do the job. And so God said for that reason. And the last reason in Chronicles is because he went to visit the medium. Because God had said, you shall not go and talk to the... You know, the reason is, not because you can't find out information. The reason is because you're going to someone other than God to get your help. And so the judgment for that in the Old Testament in the kingdom of Israel was death. So Saul is under execution because of his going against God. The three situations that Chronicles tells us about. And so Saul's dead. Jonathan's dead. What a great loss. Jonathan, what a man of God. Abinadab, his other son, are dead. One of his sons wasn't at the battle, so he's still around. But these three sons are dead, and Saul got to see him die. What a terrible thing for a dad to see. And then he takes his own life because he's scared about being captured by the the Philistines. You know, he knows the stories. You remember somebody who had been captured by the Philistines in the past days? His name was Samson. Remember that story? And then Samson was tortured and abused, and they finally led him into the temple where they brought all the princes and everybody who was anybody was there in this temple to watch Samson. And they were going to torture him to death. They said, have sport with him. What they were going to do was going to torture him to death. And they were going to watch it and laugh and have a lot of fun with that. And Saul didn't want to have the same thing happen to him. So he falls on the sword and dies. But look what the Philistines do. They're very common for them to do this in their day. So it came to pass, verse 8 says, and so it came to pass the next day, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped his armor and sent word throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim it in the temple of their idols and among their people. So they cut off his head, probably put it on a spear because that was pretty much the standard thing they did, and parade that around for people to see. They stripped him of his clothes, his armor, his garments, those of his sons. And then it says in the next verse, verse 10, and they put his armor in the temple of the Ashtaroths, and they fastened his body to the wall of Beth Shan. They're leaving his nude body hanging there, no head, just there for vultures and people to see. And it's just a mess. It's a mess as they are humiliating the memory of Saul. But you have a group of people who send out a deployment. They're very righteous folks. Notice what it says in verse 11. And when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard that what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan. And they came to Jabesh, back to their home area, and they burned them there. And they took the bones and buried them under the tarwisk tree in Jabesh and fasted 7 days. And the men of Jabesh-Gilead did very, very well. David's later on going to commend them for doing this. You remember those guys in Jabesh-Gilead? They had a strong loyalty to Saul. They were in the area of the tribe of Benjamin. And the reason they had a strong loyalty to him because there was a king that came down from the foreign nations and they came against the people of Jabesh-Gilead and they said, we're going to let you surrender. If you surrender, then you'll serve us forever. But if you surrender, all the men have to put out their right eye. So they're going to gouge out the right eye of every man in the surrender. And Saul raised an army, the first army. This was the first time he acted as king to protect the nation. And he came to this area and delivered them. So the people feel a strong tie with Saul, and they go and risk their lives. They travel at night through Philistine guarded area in enemy territory to rescue or to recover, rather, the bodies of these men and to bring them back and to bury them properly. So you have a horrible situation, a horrible story, a horrible end to the life of a man who had the opportunity to do great things. And he did wonderful things, but he messed up in his life. And it's so sad. Saul is a tragic story in the Scriptures of a man who chose to walk his way or walk the way that the people pushed him into, encouraged him to do, being pushed by public opinion rather than by following God. And ultimately, he kills himself. Well, David has to deal with this. And so the story of Saul's life ends with the last chapter of 1 Samuel. So go over to 2 Samuel chapter 1 and let's continue the story because the story just continues all the way through in these books. In fact, when these books were written out, first of all, in the Hebrew Bible, there was no first and second. There was just the book of Samuel because they're all connected. The story just continues along the same timeline. And we see how David handled the death of a foe. You know, David could have done like they did in the Wizard of Oz. You remember the musical? Ding dong, the witch is dead. You know, I mean, they could have sung ding dong, the king is dead, the mean old king, the wicked king. Ding dong, the wicked king is dead. You know, and they could have had a celebration. But David is not of cut from that nature. He is a different man, and he approaches this in a different way. The first thing he does is he mourns at the news that takes place. How he gets the news is kind of interesting. He is probably about 60 to 70 miles away from where the battle took place. So news didn't get there immediately like it does today. We see them when they're doing the shooting of a war on the news media today. He didn't have that. So it's 3 days later that he gets this. So you'll notice it says he's still in Ziklag. He's recovered his family. They're there probably just resting because they've had a heavy job going after the Amalekites that had destroyed Ziklag and stole the women and children. Verse 1 of chapter 1 of 2 Samuel says, "Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, that David stayed 2 days in Ziklag. And on the third day, behold, it happened a man came from Saul's camp with clothes torn and dust on his head. And so it was he came to David, and he fell to the ground, prostrated himself. And David said, 'Where have you come from?' And he said, 'I have escaped from the camp of Israel.' And David said to him, 'How did the matter go? Please tell me.' And he answered, 'The people have fled from the battle, and many of the people are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan and his sons are dead also.' So David said to the young man who had told him, 'How do you know that Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead?' And the young man who was with him said, 'As I happened by chance on Mount Gilboa, there was Saul leaning on his spear, and indeed the chariots and the horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me, and I answered him, "Here am I." And he said to me, "Who are you?" And I answered, "I'm an Amalekite." And he said to me, "Please stand over me and kill me, for anguish has come upon me, but my life still remains in me." So I stood over him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm, and I brought them to my Lord. Then David took hold of his own clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and Jonathan, his son, and for the people of the Lord, for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword." So you have David. First thing he does is he mourns. And you know, the way they did it in their day, they always, the Hebrews and the people of the Middle East were very expressive. In fact, they still are today. And the way they did it was they just took their clothes and ripped them. They still wore them, but they just ripped them as a symbol of how their hearts are feeling. They're ripped. And so they would do that, throw ashes on their head. They'd go sit and cry and mourn and wail and wouldn't eat. And so David is doing this same thing. He's mourning for Saul. But then he investigates the report because he wants to find out about this. So he investigates it a little bit further. Notice what he says. Verse 13. "Then David said to the young men who told him, 'Where are you from?' And he answered, 'I am the son of an alien, an Amalekite.' And David said to him, 'How was it that you were not afraid to put forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?'" You see, he said, "I'm an alien," which means he was somebody who in his staying was, I'm living in Israel. I'm not a native Israeli. I'm an alien in the land. When you're in a land, you ought to know what the laws are, right? You know, so we're in the land of North Carolina. We have certain laws that if you go in the land of South Carolina, you don't have. But if you break them in North Carolina, you face the consequences. And so they're in the land of Israel, and you don't harm the king. Why are you doing that? And this guy tells an interesting story, doesn't he? Didn't you see that was an interesting story? Do you see any difference between the story we read in the last part of Samuel 1 Samuel and this one? Do you not see the difference there? One, Saul kills himself. Another one, this guy comes along and says he killed him. Which one's right? Well, some people do several things with them. Some people blend them together and say, well, maybe Saul fell on the sword, but it didn't really kill him, and so this guy just came and finished him off. And that's a possibility. But in 1 Samuel, it says that he was dead. And over in the book of Chronicles, it tells us that Saul killed himself, that Saul actually did it himself. So I tend to think that this guy's lying. This guy's coming to David trying to get a reward. I mean, after all, he figures, hey, David's the guy who Saul chased all this time. I think he just stumbled upon Saul's body, took off his crown, took off the bracelet off his arm, and he takes those to David to show he's dead, and just wants to add a little bit of peace to it, you know, I killed him. Hopefully David would reward him for that gesture and make him great. I mean, he's probably a mercenary anyway. Maybe he was fighting for Saul. Maybe he was fighting for the Philistines. We don't know. He was on the battlefield. Maybe he was just a standard buyer, and he was going back pilfering through all the bodies just to get whatever he could get, you know? And he was just standing, watching the thing and just pilfering. Because that's what the armies did. They were going through always to get the people weren't going to be using the clothes anymore, so they'd take them off if they weren't too badly torn up from the battle. They would have those. They'd take all their armaments. Because you understand, you don't leave the armaments on the field of battle. If you do, then people from that same place can come who were not killed and get the armaments and go back. You take them all yourself. And so this guy could have just been robbing the bodies, and he happened to come upon Saul and Jonathan before the Philistines did. So David deals with him. It's kind of interesting what David says to him. He says, how did you not know that you shouldn't do this if you were a foreigner in our land? And so David speaks to one of his men. Notice verse 15. Then David called one of his young men and said, go near and execute him. And he struck him so that he died. So David said to him, your blood be on your own hand, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, I killed the Lord's anointed. And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. And he told them to teach the children of Judah the song of the bow. Indeed, it is written in the book of Jasher. Jasher is a book that is written. It's been mentioned a couple of times in the scriptures. It's mentioned in the book of Judges. It was evidently a book that had in it stories about the greats of old. But we don't know where that book is. We've never seen that book. We don't know about it. We just know it's been recorded. And so David comes, and David writes a song that's called the Song of the Bow. You know, David was kind of interesting, because whenever he was upset, whenever he was happy, whenever he was confused, he always put that to music. I mean, if he was a country music artist today, I guess all the artists do that. They put what's happening in their life into music. And so he was a country music artist back then, living in the country, and he made these songs that everybody would sing. But they always told about what was going on inside in him. They always told about the conflicts and the trials and the troubles and the emotions that he had. And he's always putting those down. And now at the death of Saul, he writes this song. And in doing this, we get to get a look inside the heart of David. What's his heart really like as he deals with this man who had been his boss? He was the king. This man who had been his father-in-law. This man who had chosen to be an enemy of his. What's David's response? How does David handle that situation? Well, I put it up here on the slides, these different words. Just watch with me as we go through it, because I think there's some interesting lessons we can learn from this. David starts out and says, the beauty of Israel is slain on their high places. How the mighty have fallen. So he calls Saul and Jonathan the beauty of Israel. It's kind of an interesting phrase to be given to them. The ones who reflect the glory on earth of Israel. Why? You know why he views them that way? Because they were God's anointed. God had chosen Saul out of all the others, and God had anointed Saul. He became the one who God raised up. And David had never forgotten that. You remember that? He would not harm Saul, not because Saul was doing the right thing, but because Saul was the anointed king. And he would not go against God's anointed. So he calls him the beauty of Israel. And He talks both of Jonathan and David as the mighty. We looking at it from this perspective, and if you read it cursory, many people come against Saul and are very harsh with him, but David refers to him as a mighty man of valor, one who wasn't scared to go into battle and fight and do great things to protect the people of Israel. You only get that phrase if you're one who leads. And you know, in their day, the generals, the king, didn't sit back and send all of his soldiers in. The king would lead everybody into battle. That's what a king did. And so Saul, taller than everybody else, easy mark to be chosen by the enemy, Saul went out ahead of him. And David calls him the mighty one, showing just how great he thinks Saul is. Then he goes to verse 20. He says, tell it not in Gath. Where was Gath? It was a Philistine town. It was Goliath's hometown, remember? It was a town David had been in for a while. Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon. Ashkelon was where they took Saul's armor. It was the resident temple of the great god of the Philistines. It was the biggest temple of that. So he said, tell it not in Ashkelon. Because you see, they would see it as their gods giving them power over the God of Israel, Yahweh. Lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. O mountains of Gilboa, that's where Saul died, let there be no dew or rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For the shield of the mighty is cast away there, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil. And so you have this situation where Gilboa, he places a curse on Gilboa because it's there that Saul died. If you go and look at Mount Gilboa today, one major side of the mountain is just rock. Still that way. They planted trees and stuff on it to try and get better stuff on top, but it's just rock there on that side. And it's still that way. For years before they did the transplanting on it, it was just a barren piece of rock from the days of David, as it didn't grow anything there. And here it is, because the mighty, the shield of the mighty is cast away, and Saul's shield can't be anointed with oil. They used two types of shields. They used a metal shield, some of them did, so they put this on it because it's made of iron to keep it from rusting. Or it was used of leather. They would keep the leather oiled up, again, to keep it from getting brittle and falling apart. So it's just saying it's not anointed now because Saul has died. And he says in verse 22, from the blood of the slain and from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, and the sword of Saul did not return empty. They were great warriors, he says. And Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their lives. And their death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles and stronger than lions. They were what? I mean, didn't they have tiffs? Well, yeah, they did. Over David, they had a lot of tiffs. You remember that? They had a lot of battles. But David's talking about their life. He's talking about how in their life, the biggest part of their life, they were together. And as they are now in death, they're not divided. Swifter than eagles, stronger than lions. What great pictures. Fast to the battle and strong in the battle. That's how he views these two. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with luxury, who put on ornaments of gold on your apparel. Well, where would Saul get all that? How would Saul do that? Well, you remember Saul went out against the Philistines? When you go out against the Philistines and you battle the Philistines and they have died in battle, you know what you take? You take all the booty. You take everything. And so Saul had enriched Israel just from that. And he had enriched Israel because he kept the Philistines from making raids against them so they could grow their crops and sell their crops and their animals wouldn't be stolen. And Saul had protected them. And they had done well in the nation of Israel during the time of Saul. And he says, how the mighty are fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan was slain on your high places. I'm distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You've been very pleasant to me, and your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of women. Interesting phrase that he's using there. People in our day have taken that and turned that to mean something that is devious and, and reflects a homosexual nature, but that's not what the passage is talking about. Because what he's talking about here is the relationship between two guys. And all guys know that if you have a friend that becomes like a brother to you, somebody who's real close to you, there's a different type of relationship than you have than with women. With your wife, it's a special relationship. I'm not taking anything away from that. But girlfriends have girlfriends, I'm sure it's the same way, and guys have guy friends that are the same way, where you have this bond that's together, where you understand one another. I mean, there's certain things that a guy can understand about another guy that a lady's not going to have, you know, I mean, you all have trouble figuring us out like we have trouble figuring you ladies out, right? I mean, that's just typical. Other ladies understand each other, so guys understand each other. And that's what David's talking about. I had this guy who I really was a friend with. What a guy Jonathan was. You remember Jonathan came to him after David fought with Goliath? And Jonathan's heart was knit together with him. He gave Jonathan his armor at that time, his weapons at that time. Jonathan gave them to David. When David was on the run, Jonathan went and visited him one time. When Saul was out looking for him, Jonathan got through the lines and went and actually talked with him. And Jonathan said, I know you're going to be king one day, and I'll be standing right next to you. Here's Jonathan, willingly giving up the throne because he'd heard God had said he'd given it to David, and Jonathan's 100% for David. Isn't that an amazing man that he would be that way? And David recognized him, how great he was. He was really a brother of David. And he says, how the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war perished. Man, again, referring to them that way as just weapons. So, what a great, great song, isn't it, as he's putting it together. You get to see his heart. Because from the time of grief, David writes these different things. And let me just give you a couple of lessons that I gleaned out of this of how we should deal with family or friends or people when they die that we know. The first thing we should do is express grief when they die. It's okay to express grief. Now, their way was to rip their clothes. I don't know if that's going to be our way. You know, we do that today and people look at you kind of funny. How do we do it? Well, some people get mad and throw things. Some people yell and scream. Some people just go off and weep. Some people go hibernate, get away from folks. There's different ways that people express their grief, but it's proper to do that. David's method was his own way, the way of the society around him. I don't know what our methods are. They're different methods. But that's okay to do that. In the Scriptures, we read these words from 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 13. Paul writes and says, I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep, euphemism for those who die, lest you sorrow as others who have no hope. So we can weep, but you don't have to wipe out about it, because God provides for them. God cares for them, and we don't have to be as people who have no hope. Here's the second thing. Second thing we need to do is we need to forgive past hurts. If you've got a friend, I doubt you've not had a situation where a friend hadn't hurt you. Most of the time, if you have a good friend, they have hurt you. And to be your friend continually, you've got to get over it. Family members, have they ever hurt you? Yeah, a lot of times they've hurt you. This is his father-in-law. This is his boss. He'd hurt him a lot, but David had already forgiven him. How do I know that? Look at his heart. He's sharing his heart here. He's not just not writing a song to be published. He's writing from his heart what's going on, what he's feeling. The beauty of Israel is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. Look at that. I mean, the Scriptures say this. In Ephesians chapter 4, Paul writes and says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. That's an intent to do harm, malice. Be kind to one another. Tenderhearted. Forgiving one another, even as God has forgiven, and Christ has forgiven you. So David had already forgiven him in his heart. He'd forgiven Saul. Now he has this statement that he makes about Saul. And the last thing that he does is this. The first is he goes ahead and grieves. That's proper. The second thing is he makes sure he forgives those things that were bad. And the best time to do them is when they happen, not wait until the end, but David forgave, and the third thing he did was he focused on the good points, passing over all the bad. You know, in this whole song, he didn't mention one bad thing Saul did. He didn't say, 11 times he tried to kill me. In fact, he didn't elevate himself. Now I'm going to be king. Yay! Instead, what he does is he talks about the good things about Saul. And there were good things about Saul. They accomplished the task of protecting the nation. That's what they were to do. Saul was anointed by Samuel as the first king to provide cover for the nation to keep the Philistines at bay. Remember, we come out of the time of the judges, and Samuel is the last of the judges and the first of the prophets. And then he makes the first king who's going to protect the people. And so Saul did his job. He protected the nation. He accomplished his task. And therefore, David writes and says, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back and the sword of Saul did not return empty. They protected. They were military protectors. They were in harmony and loyalty with one another. I mean, to be sure, they had problems, but David remembers the time when Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their lives. And David goes back to that. And he states, in their death, they weren't divided. They were together. They're swift to the battle and strong in protecting the people. They use that, swifter than eagles. That means they swoop down. That's what an eagle does. It swoops down. They went. They didn't wait for the enemy to come to them. They went to the enemy. They were strong in the battle. And they were able to take the situation in hand. They brought wealth to the whole nation. Provided them with ornaments of gold, scarlet, luxury, because they enhanced the nation during the time of Saul. And Jonathan, boy, he was a true friend. He was a guy that David just really loved and cared for very much. And in fact, God actually calls them weapons. How are the mighty fallen, the weapons of war perish. That's how God the Spirit inspired David as he's writing all these words. And so you have David writing this great lamentation, this great song of sorrow. The Scriptures say this, very interesting word as you're talking about people. David could have bad-mouthed him, couldn't he? None of us would have even thought much about it if he did, because we just recounting the things that he did. I mean, he could have talked every one of those 11 times, and if there were more, shared us. But instead, he didn't. And the Scriptures say in Ephesians chapter 4, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. Well, I tell you, I read this song, and it imparts grace to me. Because it's David elevating the first king of Israel, Saul, and holding him up as a man who God used to protect the nation. A man who should be honored and not trashed, but a man who David, even though Saul had chosen to be an enemy of David, David never chose to be an enemy of Saul, and David cared for him. I guess I see in this a great example of the words that Jesus said when he said, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do you think David did that? I mean, from the song you can see it, right? Do good to those who hate you. David didn't take his life. Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. Boy, I tell you what, great example of a guy doing that. May it be in our lives that we have to put up with people who have chosen to be foes of us. Because if you live a righteous life in this world, you're going to have people that are going to oppose you. So the people that have chosen to be foes of us, may we be people who love them, that we might show them the love of God in our lives. Because it doesn't matter what they think about us. It matters very much what they think about God and walking with Him. So it's a great, great story of what David did to follow the admonition that the Lord gives us. In the picture, you got the barbed wire. I think that's the great thing I see, the separation between people. And so may it be that we love our enemies in spite of them putting up walls to barricade us out, that we love them. Well, let's bow our hearts before our Lord. Thank you, Lord, for your goodnesses to us. Thank you for David's life. Thank you that you took a man from a boy from the sheepfold and placed your Spirit in him and empowered him that he might stand in the face of danger, that he might pursue following you in the face of long periods of disappointment, that he might turn back to you after he ventured away. Thank you, Lord, for giving us the stories of the life of David. By your grace, Lord, would you work in us that we who now in this generation walk in the earth might be people who follow the good examples that he set for us and be people who are after your heart, Lord. Be people who want to follow your ways all of our lives. Make us, Lord, like David's greater son, Jesus Christ. Conform us to his image by the power of your Spirit working in us. In his glorious name we pray. Amen.